This is The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres. On the show, we'll share innovative strategies, expert insights, and success stories from industry leaders across the world. You'll learn everything you need to turn your contact centre into a strategic value centre, where interactions become memorable experiences. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Hope.
Today, we're chatting with Tim Buzzer, co-founder of Attune Work Solutions, recently acquired by Verint. This is a flexible scheduling system which enables contact center agents to manage their own work schedules to improve their work-life balance. With the debate around the benefits of flexible work arrangements raging, Tim is a passionate advocate for increasing flexibility in the workplace to empower staff to be more autonomous. In this episode, Tim will clarify what autonomy and flexibility in the workplace means and the benefits for employees and businesses. He'll also share a powerful example of how increasing flexibility allowed one contact center agent to go from struggling to balance her responsibilities to thriving at work. Let's jump in. Hello, Tim. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Sean. Great to be here.
So, Tim, it has been a very long time since we spoke to you last. You were episode 4. We recorded that one in person. So for anyone listening and you're keen to see Tim's first edition, maybe there's even a YouTube recording of that one, a video, I'm not sure. But Tim was one of the first guests that we had on to help us launch the pod. So we're thrilled to get you back on. And so much has happened in your life, Tim, since we recorded that episode. So we'd love to unpack a little bit of that, share with our listeners what you've been up to, because it's good mixture of solving a problem very commercially and equally very purpose-driven and inspiring at the same time. So it's just a great mix of things. So for those that might not know you, Tim, tell us a bit about what you do.
Yeah, so my current role is Director of Workplace Flexibility for Verint, and that's a culmination of more than a decade working across the contact center industry, helping the industry embrace more flexibility for employees. Started with work from home back in 2010. And as I rolled out work from home across various companies, recognized that that's only the beginning of what flexibility can be for a contact center employee and what it can unlock for employees and just people and their lives and the potential to create improvements in well-being, more healthy experiences, and enable people to truly embrace their passions and add that quality of life that perhaps was being prevented from by a commitment to an employer or commitment to a job.
So your discovery of this came through your work with contact center. So tell us a little bit about how you first got involved in the contact center world.
Yeah, well, that takes me right back, doesn't it? So my first career was as a social worker for the Salvation Army in Grey Street in St Kilda. Did everything from handing out needles and to emergency housing, material aid, ran a meal program, did all sorts of community-based work. That was kind of my passion. And I got burned out from that, to be honest. I saw this revolving door and just saw that we were not really moving people on from that place that they were stuck in. We were sustaining them, but we weren't really moving them on. And I got frustrated by that and started looking for other ways in which I could give value into people's lives. And that led me to studying natural medicine, which then led me to needing a job. And I took a job in a call center. And to my surprise, working in a call center and then becoming a team leader in a call center, I found that purpose being fulfilled. That opportunity to, as a team leader, to contribute to people's lives in a positive way and discover that leadership is actually an incredible privilege. And within that role of a leader, you have the opportunity to have a positive impact on people that not only has an impact on their performance and their experience at work, but that impact has a ripple effect across their entire life. And so that experience just resulted in me engaging in a career that now is nearly 30 years later, believe it, you know, which is extraordinary to think about. But nearly 30 years later, I'm still working in that same industry because I can see the opportunity still today, just now working more at a systems level rather than at a local level on trying to shift that employee experience across the industry.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to describe that working on it at a systems level, it's where you can have the maximum impact. And yeah, I'm glad that you have had the opportunity to play at that level, because I think you have had such a profound impact on the lives of some of the people that you've worked with, and we'll get you to chat about a little bit about some of those examples later on. So you co-founded that company called Attune, and that's recently been acquired by Verint, as you mentioned, and you created some software to allow contact center agents to self-manage their own schedules to promote flexibility and autonomy. And sort of for me, when I first started talking to you about this, I thought, Tim has found this is the holy grail. This is unheard of. How has he done this? So tell us a little bit first, though, what does autonomy and flexibility mean, and what are the benefits?
Yeah, I think autonomy and flexibility, they're on the same continuum, but they're not the same thing. So flexibility, we've used in the industry for a long time. So that's the ability to get a shift swap, the ability to change your roster because my university schedule has shifted, so therefore I need to change my roster at work. So we've had various ways of engaging with flexibility as an industry that have met some needs but not all needs. Autonomy is much further down the scale, that ability to self-manage, to be self-directed, to take ownership over your roster, to not have more broadly your work, to not have somebody leaning over your shoulder telling you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and where to do it, which has very much been the history of contact centers. And I think that contact centers uniquely prescriptive around how they manage their workforce and traditionally have been. But what's really exciting is the industry is shifting, and shifting quickly away from that, as we're now recognizing that there is human consequences of that highly prescriptive workplace. So autonomy is really where I think the future is at. So that ability to move towards self-directed, self-managed ownership of your work, of your role, of how you do your work, where you do your work, and when you do your work. And the more we move in that direction, the better outcomes the industry is getting for their customers, for their business, more efficient operations, and of course, better experience for the employee.
I really like the distinction that you make between autonomy and flexibility. Both are equally important things to focus on. And I think the autonomy part for me is interesting. Can you talk about, maybe in comparison to flexibility, but why is autonomy so important, particularly in a contact center environment?
I think we do our best work when we're able to design that work the way we work for ourselves. So if I go back to when I began in contact centers, we were scripting conversations with customers to a very finite detail. And then we were listening to calls, and as the technology evolved, we started recording calls to hold people accountable to adherence to those scripts. And the consequence was that 80% of customers were getting a good or great experience because those scripts worked for the majority of customers. Otherwise, we wouldn't be using them. But there was still a large percentage of customers where those scripts didn't work for. And agents would get frustrated. And me as an agent back then got frustrated because I knew that I could deliver a better experience if I was able to use more of my voice and bring more natural conversation, natural engagement to the experience. So I think that's a really powerful example that highlights that when we give people that the right training and then the freedom to bring their own voice, their own way of working to that customer interaction, you move from 80% to the potential of 100% of interactions being positive and creating great outcomes. And that translates across the whole experience, and it translates into scheduling, it translates into all aspects of the role and the environment. If we give people the right information, the right skills, and then empower them to go about their job in a way that works best for them, then you've got a better chance of getting that ideal outcome for every interaction, for every aspect of the way in which the business operates.
That's great. And I've heard you use the term truly flexible. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that means? And is there an example you can share to support it?
I can. I mean, really, it was a way of trying to mature that distinction between what is flexibility and what is autonomy. So it's in some ways the same theme. It's around how do we empower people to be self-managed and self-directed around their schedules, to actually empower them to make changes without having to get manager approval, without having to get workforce planning to approve a schedule change. Because as soon as there's an approval process involved, whether that's even automated, then we're creating a potential resistance point and we're not giving the agent the ability to make the changes that they need when they need to. What's most beneficial is when you can give people that ability to manage the schedules themselves and where they don't have to tell the business why they need it. Because all too often, agents need to make a change to their roster because they've got a personal event in their life. And that change in their roster may not be advantageous to the business, but it's something that they desperately need for themselves in their life. And so the way in which most businesses operate, even flexible businesses, is that they will require the agent to come to the leader and request that change because it can't be automatically approved because it's not advantageous to the business. The leader then needs to provide a justification for approving that, or the agent needs to provide a justification to the leader so the leader can then approve it, which means usually sharing that situation that's happening in their life, perhaps to somebody who they don't particularly want to share that with. Often it could be any number of things. And I've got some examples of people who have shared some stories with me, which are quite revealing. Then people are able to go in and make those changes quickly and without any kind of friction, and then get on with the thing that and address that issue in their life without having to kind of worry about work. I had one lady who, after they had access to this level of autonomous, flexible scheduling, she said to me, "I've been blackballed by the organization. I think I'd make a great leader. I've got potential to grow in this organization. I want to work here in the future, but I've had terrible leave over the last 12 months. And that leave is because she was dealing with an alcoholic husband and all of the issues that came with that. Now, she now separated. She got her life back and she was now in a much better place. When she was having all that leave, she didn't tell the business about what was happening with in her personal life because she didn't want to share that. So she just was thought of as untrustworthy, irresponsible employee who just called in sick all the time, called in sick on short notice, didn't turn up regularly, it was often late, and therefore somebody who we're not going to invest in, we're not going to give opportunities to. Yet she was dealing with this incredibly difficult situation and dealing with it very well and found her way through that where a lot of people don't. And therefore, perhaps a bit of a hero, really. But from the business's perspective, she wasn't. And now she was on the other side of that. She had this legacy reputation that was holding her back. And she said, "Look, if we had a tune back then I would have been able to make those shift changes, avoid calling in sick, avoid having to be late so often, and avoid that reputational damage that I've now got as a legacy."
That's an amazing story. The ability to give people the agency and the dignity to be able to make those changes is just so powerful. And you've solved a perennial problem that's existed. I mean, it's been existed forever, really, hasn't it? And it's no one's really found a way to solve it. And you've done that, which is pretty inspiring. And I think I'd encourage anyone who's listening but I'm sure they can empathize with that situation, having heard you lay it out like that. But I always think about the roles I've had in contact centers, and I've never been a frontliner. I've never had to go to someone and explain that I needed time off and why. I've always just had the luxury of being able to manage my schedule in the way that I've wanted to. And I often think about how different that is, and would encourage any leader who themselves hasn't been in that position as a frontliner to try to walk in the shoes of someone who might have to do that. And it is very powerful. It creates quite a lot of motivation for you as a leader to say, we ought to have a better way to give people access to this level of both flexibility and autonomy. I think the autonomy is a really important part there. Even in an automated approval, I like the way that you put that. That starts to break down that autonomy. And even though it might be automated, it takes that agency away from someone to feel like they're truly managing something themselves. So it's a fantastic solution. So what about you, Tim? We talked about the autonomy and flexibility at work for contact center folks. You've been role modeling this yourself. Tell us a bit about how you've incorporated flexibility into your schedule.
Yeah, I've really wanted to push the boundaries of flexibility for myself to see what it could unlock in my life, partly because there's goals that I wanted to achieve and experiences that I wanted to have, but also because I wanted to experiment on myself to see what is possible. What does the limit of flexibility look like for me? And that has meant leaving Australia 2 years ago. So just when COVID was still raging, it was not wrapped up in Australia yet. I had to get permission from the government to leave and shift my working pattern to a 4-day week and really embrace the working from anywhere lifestyle and pursue some of those goals. And that was also motivated by my own sort of personal story, which is that we lost my mother in 2018, and I've seen my father kind of slow down in his life, and many of the goals that he has still that he would like to achieve have now become out of reach for him. He's just lost that will to kind of drive to do those things, lost a bit of confidence in his life since my mother's passed. And it's made me reflect that I'm now in my 50s. I'm at a point in my life where I also have a lot of goals, and I don't necessarily want to wait until I retire, until I stop working before I can actually pursue those goals. And flexibility has the ability, flexible working or being able to work more autonomously has the potential for me to actually pursue those goals and also to have a career and build a successful company, support, work across the industry and still pursue that whilst also doing things that are perhaps a little more adventurous. So when we left Australia, the world was still in a bit of a chaotic state. We had planned to go to India, which we eventually did. But India was not locked down, but they had a lot of restrictions on travel around the country between states, which were obstacles to what we wanted to do. And so we ended up going to Istanbul, which was just a pragmatic decision. It was a country that was open, where there was a lot of freedom of movement, and it had an airport that went anywhere in the world. So we figured that if there was another outbreak of COVID, it would give us the freedom to fly pretty much to anywhere where there was still some liberties that we could enjoy. And we fell in love with Istanbul, and it is the most beautiful city in the world. And we met the most wonderful community. The LGBT community there is just the most beautiful people. And so we literally just fell in love with Istanbul, and we ended up spending a lot of time there. And so that was the first thing that his flexibility unlocked for me, was I ended up living in a country that I'd never dreamed that I would, meeting people and falling in love with a culture I knew nothing about. After we spent some time there, we did go to India. We bought a four-wheel drive, and we drove across the Himalayas, and we spent 6 months driving around India, which was a really interesting experience. Driving in India, I think there's some analogies there with driving in India and complex adaptive systems, which, you know, my brain was constantly kind of engaging with, was like, you know, this is chaotic, but it works. And there's no other way this could work. It really isn't. Like, you tried to put rules on those roads, it would just grind to a halt. But this chaotic, crazy roads, once you get into it, it becomes transrational. Like, I'm driving around and going, okay, after a few weeks of driving, I just know where to go. But if I had to explain to somebody why I made that decision and drove that way or cut into that traffic in the way I did, I couldn't explain it. It just is the way it works. It is organic. It's an organic, natural system. It's the only way it could be. So yeah, we drove around India. We explored the Himalayas. I drove around with 3 SIM cards in my pocket because I needed to be online all the time for work. And yeah, it was interesting. It was a great experience.
It is amazing how that does just work. Ridden mopeds in Southeast Asia, and it's terrifying, but it does work. You just got to go with it.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you tried to put a lane like we do in most Western countries for different traffic. Like, we might have a slow lane for trucks and a faster lane for cars and another lane for overtaking. And the rules work, and you have cars now that can follow the lines. And you can basically take your hands off the steering wheel, or you can take your hands off the steering wheel and they'll drive for you because it's so ordered. But it could never work in India because you've got bicycles, you've got motorbikes, you've got cars, you've got trucks, but you've also got cows, you've also got goats, you've also got goat herders, and you've got camels pulling trays, you know, big wooden trays behind them. The diversity of mobility solutions in India just means that you couldn't create that sort of structured, rules-based way of organizing. It has to be an organic, natural system, and it really does work. I mean, people look at it from the outside and go, this is not working, this is chaos. But it's not chaos. It's complex, but it's not chaotic. There's a powerful analogy behind all of that, which is that when we put too much structure and control-based systems in an environment, and we can tie this back to work, what we do is we end up with a very narrow set of potential outcomes. And that's often the objective. We want a narrow set of potential outcomes. But the creators of those rules, their idea of what those potential outcomes and objectives are may not be the best ones. And in fact, most certainly they're not, because we've all got limitations in our and biases in our ability to set those. So a little bit of chaos is actually a good thing. A little bit of freedom, the ability to be self-directed and self-managed, the ability for people to determine their own direction and their own futures within a workplace, to operate without all those highly structured and directive rules-based systems, can actually deliver a better outcome. When I'm talking about these complex adaptive systems, I often, you know, think about, remember when we were kids, we used to get those line drawing exercises where you'd have a page with dots on it and you'd join the dots. And when you join the dots, it'd form a picture. So just imagine you had one of those exercises in front of you, and those dots formed the picture of a rabbit, and there was 1,000 dots on the page. But once you joined all those dots together, they created the picture of a rabbit. And then if you take another piece of paper and you scatter those 1,000 dots across the page randomly, I can guarantee you that you can still join those dots, not all of them, but you can still draw a rabbit by joining dots on that page. But you could also draw a house. You could also draw a dog. You could also draw a human. You could also draw whatever you like. You can form any picture you like by connecting dots on that now 1,000 dots scattered across a page. And that's what I see with a lot of workplaces is you create a situation where you can only draw a rabbit, but that leaves such a lack of flexibility and adaptability in that system that when the business needs to adjust to a change in external events, it just can't. Whereas if you have a more chaotic system, then you can actually create and the business can adapt more quickly. And there's conditions that need to be supported to enable that. Yes, the people need to be skilled and they need to be capable and so on. But if you invest in your people in the right way and then give them more freedom, clear objectives, then you will get better outcomes and have a more adaptable system and a more sustainable system into the future.
I love that. That's such a great example to help people understand that complexity and the different potentialities that you can get when you remove some of those constraints. Why do some of these barriers exist in contact centers? You mentioned a couple of them. Obviously, we're trying to increase our chances of getting a predetermined outcome, which is favorable, which is whatever it might be in a contact center environment. But what barriers are holding us back from being able to expose different potential outcomes?
There's not a simple answer, I don't think, to that, because it requires a bit of self-reflection from leaders and probably a difficult conversation for some leaders around their ability to trust. When we think about post-COVID, I've talked to a lot of businesses post-COVID and many of them will say they had their best years during COVID, particularly those who were servicing customers via contact centres and online solutions, which is many, many of the large call centres across Australia. During that period, all the workforce was working from home and they had some of their best years, the most efficient years of their organisational history, achieved some of the best results. Yet now there's 60-something percent of call centres now are operating hybrid and up to 15% of call centres are requiring people to work in call centres full-time. And when I say hybrid, they're forcing people to come back in the office 2 or 3 days a week. Why are they doing that? You've got absolute evidence that working from home full-time for your call centre workforce works, and it worked very well for a couple of years, and yet you're defaulting back to requiring FaceTime. There must be a reason, and undoubtedly there are biases in leadership positions that is driving that. People want to work in the office and therefore they want their team to work in the office with them. They could work from home when I was working from home, but now I'm in the office, they better come in the office too. It's a very problematic situation I think we're in, when I think there's a real opportunity for us as an industry to reflect on that. Why are we making this decision to force people back into the office when there's absolutely no reason for that and clear evidence that we don't need to do that, but we're still doing it? I don't actually have the answer for that. I think that there's definitely something going on within the psyche of leadership and biases that is driving that.
Yeah, there's definitely a tension there between trying to achieve outcomes and control. I'm certainly not trying to generalize about leaders out there who are asking people to come back in, and I don't have any judgment on them for doing that. I'm purely speaking from my own personal experience as a leader. And earlier in my leadership career, control was something that I used a lot to make myself feel better about the outcomes that I thought I could achieve. And if I applied more control in a situation, I got into more detail, or if I prescribed more of what I wanted people to do and how I wanted them to lead their teams, I gave myself a sense of what I know now was a false sense of control about the outcomes that I could achieve, because to the situation you've just described, it narrowed the set of outcomes. I thought it was narrowing the set of outcomes to what was most favorable, but I just limited all of that upside potential. And I wasn't prepared to take that leap of faith to remove some of the shackles that I'd put on, because I thought they were going to give me an outcome that I wanted. And invariably, you know, sometimes it did, but it was hard work. I just found it was such a hard way to lead people, and it didn't build that genuine trust and connection with them, because no matter how much I tried to be a warm and caring, generous leader, my actions were acting in opposition to that, because I was taking away all of their control. And so I think there is a real tension there, and it exists in leadership. I think, unfortunately, we grow up, anyone who's been a leader grows up probably with other role models around them who lead in this way. and are given plenty of examples and case studies of where applying more control, more expectations on people and how they should deliver a result is the way to lead. And I think it does take a leap of faith as a leader to say, I'm actually just going to trust people. I know the outcome that I want to achieve, and I can be really clear about what that outcome looks like, but I will let people find their own path to achieving that. Even if it might not be how I would have gotten from A to B, they could find their own way. And as long as appropriately thinking about the risks and we've got guardrails in place, there's enough room on that playing field for that person to go out there and express themselves in a way that helps them get the result. And I found that was incredibly liberating when I was able to do that. And I think that is, it's very hard in a contact center environment where there is so much, the stakes can be pretty high. You know, you only have to have a few percentage difference in a result for it to be pretty meaningful and for there to be consequences that you are then asked to explain or try to mitigate. So I think the stakes are high. So I agree with you. There's no real easy answer to this or a prescriptive way to say, hey, just kind of do these things and you can lead in a different way. But you've got to trust yourself, I think, as well as a leader. You have to trust yourself that you will be able to lead an environment where your people have more autonomy and they can find that path to A and B themselves.
You're right about the high stakes. That's definitely a key contributor to why call centers can often be slow to embrace more liberated ways of working. As you said, a 1 or 2 percentage point move can have huge impacts on the bottom line and the performance of the business. And I think that's part of the reason why it's difficult as a leader to give that level of autonomy to a workforce. When you build guardrails and you create those conditions where it's more prescriptive for an employee, then you've also got a bit of, trying to find a nicer way of saying it, a bit of cover your ass. Because if things do go pear-shaped, you can point to the fact that you did everything right as a leader. You've put all these guardrails in place. You put all the controls in place. And yes, maybe the performance didn't end up where we wanted it to, but I did the right thing. Whereas if you're operating in a more liberated style of leadership where you're giving more trust and autonomy to people, you're pushing those guardrails out, creating a bigger playing field, like you said, then you haven't quite got the same level of protection, I think, as a leader that when you're reporting up the line around where you can say, well, you know, look, I've done all these things to ensure my people did the right thing. Now, if somebody does the wrong thing, well, you know, you couldn't have created a tighter, more controlled, more directive environment. If somebody's still done the wrong thing, well, that's on the person. You know, I've done everything right. Whereas if you create a very liberated, open environment and people do the wrong thing, then you're leaving yourself exposed to be criticized or as a leader by those more senior to you. So as a call center manager, it's just there's this default to creating a safe place for yourself, which means putting in tight guardrails. So the culture needs to come top down. The exciting thing is lots of organizations are starting to do that. I've been talking to one organization, a large financial services business, who actually has been to the Netherlands to look at Voorzorg, which is a nursing organization in that fully empowers teams to be self-managed and self-directed, and bringing back their observations from that experience and trying to cascade that across the organization. So when you've got top-down CEOs directing an organization towards that type of future, then I am very excited about the potential of what that could mean for the frontline employee.
Yeah, because that creates a different type of safety, doesn't it? It's a safety to remove some of those boundaries that might limit that downside risk, but also limits the upside potential as well. That they're particularly inspiring, those organizations. And you're right, you don't have to look too far these days to find plenty of those examples. And if they're not necessarily in contact centers, there's definitely some transferable learnings and ways of thinking about how you might do that in your contact center as well. I think we are moving in the right track. Sometimes it feels 2 steps forwards, 1 step back, but I think generally speaking, it nets out being pretty positive in the direction that we're heading.
That was probably my biggest reflection during COVID for my own personal life and for my professional life is I've spent quite a number of my years as a person within the industry, perhaps preaching from the pulpit somewhat around flexibility and autonomy and how we need to shift the industry in this direction. And I realized that that's not how we affect influence in a powerful way. It's actually through just by being an example and creating an example for others to follow. That's the real way in which you create sustained impact and have a positive influence. Preaching your view of the world and hoping that others will agree with you or shift their view to match yours is kind of a no-win approach. Whereas living your life in a way that reflects your values And creating an example for others is the most powerful thing you can do. So for me, that was a large motivator to really explore flexibility personally and see what working from anywhere, working a four-day week, having complete ownership over my calendar and my diary could unlock for me. And as I said before, it's unlocked an incredible experience. Currently, I'm living in Greece. The sun is just starting to come up behind me as we're recording this podcast. And I've been here now for 8 months. It's extraordinary. The experiences I've had, I've had the best 2 years of my life without any question. And that's because I took a risk and embraced a level of flexibility in my work that previously I haven't had. I've also had the most successful 2 years in my life professionally. So it's quite extraordinary how the unlocking my own personal mindset towards flexibility for myself, what that has created.
That's amazing. And I think hands down, if anyone had any doubts about whether you'd be able to work and run a business remotely, I mean, you have knocked that out of the park. You're up a mountain with an oxygen bottle and now you're in sunny Greece. So you're just getting the best of everything the world has to offer.
I'm almost disappointed I didn't get a business call whilst we drove over a pass just a few hours from Leh Ladakh, which we had oxygen in the car and I literally had an oxygen mask as I was taking shots of oxygen as I was driving over it because we're over 18,000 feet. I got up the top and I was quite dizzy when I was up the top. You have to be very careful when you're driving because you climb the altitude very quickly. It's not like you're hiking up a mountain and stepping up over a series of days. We went from, I don't know how many feet, the Leh Ladakh's at about 3,500 meters, I think. So anyway, we were higher than Everest Base Camp when we went over the pass. And I was, it would be great if I got a phone call up here.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, there's reception just about everywhere in India. I mean, wow. The population supports a mobile network that you can only dream of in a country like Australia. But it would have been a nice story to be able to tell.
Yeah. Closing a deal at the higher than Everest Base Camp, that would have been pretty cool.
That would be, it would have been great.
So with all that said, Tim, how or what advice do you have for contact center executives who are looking to improve flexibility for their staff?
Just take some baby steps. It's not necessarily about buying our solution. I think, obviously that's a giant leap for most call centers when you get to the point where you're empowering agents to be self-managed and self-directed. Of course, it delivers great outcomes, but there's a journey to getting to that point and a cultural journey, and baby steps are the path to that. So just creating more freedom in your business, even if that means giving the authority to the team leader rather than the operations manager to approve short-term leave requests or to make changes to the roster. The closer you can get decision-making to the front line, the better. And as you start to do that, you will start to see a shift in the culture. People become more trusting, the benefits start to be realized, and the journey just begins.
Great advice. All right, well, let's start to wrap things up. And we have two questions for you to finish with, Tim, that we ask all our guests. And I'm very curious to get your take on these. And the first one is, if you could change one thing about the contact center industry, what would it be?
Collaboration. The industry gets confused sometimes around what it means to compete with each other. I think that we've got so much to learn from each other. There's incredible work being done across the industry, some incredible innovations happening inside organizations, but we're not hearing about them. I get a little bit more of a view of it because I talk to more companies in my role than I did in the past when I worked inside a contact center as a call center manager or executive. I didn't really know what was happening outside of my organization. I got snippets, but not very much insight. So it's very hard to get a vision of what best practice looked like or what next practice was looking like. And so you're operating somewhat in a bit of a bubble. The call center industry, yes, if I'm working for a financial services business, I'm competing with other financial services businesses, but there's a lot of other call centers, telcos, energy companies, other call centers as big as the one I was managing. The ability to talk and interact with those other call centers and hear what they're doing and learn from their experiences could have really accelerated my growth as a leader and the outcomes that I was able to deliver for the organization. So we need to do more of that, I think, as an industry, and you can break down the barriers and just share more. AusContact is definitely a good industry body. It's doing a lot more now to enable that sharing, but I think there's a lot of opportunity still there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I always felt when I was leading contact centers that I would have loved more of that opportunity to collaborate. And I was working in financial services and I saw some of my peers who were in the risk teams and the underwriting teams. They had these amazing professional bodies that brought together people from different organizations and they shared data and they talked about what they were doing. And they seemed to have this very different view of collaborating. And whilst, of course, they competed with each other, they found a way to share what they were doing because they were trying to improve the outcomes for the industry and for clients, for their customers. So it's good to see some of that happening more in the contact center world, and props to anyone who's encouraging that kind of stuff. All right, second question then is, if you had a crystal ball, what do you think the future of contact centers looks like?
Oh, it's a difficult question because I think we're at a pivot point as an industry across many different fronts. So AI is obviously a topic of conversation, and we're seeing how AI is changing the industry and lots of new technology emerging on the back of that. And we're seeing a shift in ways of working, and we're seeing a shift in customer behavior and around how they want to engage with organizations. So there's a lot playing out right now. The truth, though, is that there's more to a human interaction than just the words. And there's something more powerful and perhaps unknowable around that. So we do value a human interaction versus a machine interaction more highly. And I think we always will. And I think as we learn to live with AI, we will appreciate that even more. And so there's going to be a role for contact centers into the future. I'm confident of that. I'm not sure exactly what it looks like. It'll definitely be different to what it is today. If I had to take a guess, I can imagine a smaller contact center workforce globally that's working more autonomously, highly skilled, dealing with more complex and more emotionally charged situations. Not that they're more than they deal with today, but that greater mix of those calls that are complex and emotionally charged. Like, for example, I know that businesses at the moment are getting a lot of calls from customers who are under financial stress. Those sorts of calls are not going to be handled by an AI. They're going to be always handled by a human being, I think, and I hope, because I certainly know that I don't want to talk to an AI, no matter how good it is at impersonating a human being. I want to talk to somebody's heart, not just their mind, when I'm dealing with something like that. So I think there's always going to be a role. And I'm somewhat excited about that future because that's almost gets back to where I started in my life and my career as a social worker and dealing with people's difficult, complex, emotionally charged situations. And I feel like that's where the industry is heading. It's going to be taking more of those calls or a higher proportion of those calls.
Lovely answer, Tim. And I hope that for that future as well. And I hope that things like AI can actually help complement some of those really deeply emotional conversations that do require someone with a heart who can put themselves in the shoes of the person on the other end of the phone. Because some of those really complex conversations can be hard to problem solve and find a solution for. So hopefully things like AI can actually help us give better outcomes to people because it's able to actually see things at a level that, you know, we can't see them today. So I think there's a really positive opportunity there. Or we'll have solutions to problems that we've had for a long time that the solutions will be things that we couldn't have imagined.
I agree. I think humanity is at a pivot point on AI on a number of levels, but ultimately it comes down to a question of how much authority do I want to give to a entity external from myself to have control over my life? Whatever that entity is, whether it's an AI entity or something else, how much authority do I want to give? And no matter how smart that entity is, how much control do I want to give to that external authority? And AI has the potential to be the decision maker for everything in our life. But that's not a way I want to live. I want to make mistakes. I want to experience this spontaneity. I want things to be unknown. I want to experience the unexpected. And there's a joy in that kind of humanity that I fully want to embrace. I see AI as a compliment. There's certainly things that would love AI to assist with in my life. But AI could evolve to be situations of making all the decisions in my life. And it gets back to our earlier conversation around how many rules and how many controls do we want to have in order to create a narrower set of outcomes. If I'm a very fearful person, then I perhaps would be biased towards giving an external authority absolute control over my life with the assurance that nothing bad will ever happen. But that's not how I want to live, because if I live my life in that way, then I'm then denying myself enormous amount of other potential experiences. I'm only enabling one potentiality, but there's many more potentialities that could be better or just more enjoyable. Or, for example, that experience of driving across the Himalayas, if I asked an AI whether I should do that, the answer would be absolutely no. I mean, the risks were enormous. We drove past and through rock slides. We had wheels almost over the edge of cliffs. It was frightening at times, absolutely, without a question. And my husband still looks at me and says, "You're so lucky that I did that with you," because there was times we were looking over the cliff when I was driving and I was up against the wall and he's literally looking over the cliff when he looks out the window. And then a truck starts coming towards you and we had to drive the car up onto the side of the cliff so the truck could get past. I mean, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. I'm so glad that I've had it. I saw the most extraordinary landscape. I got to connect with Mother Earth in a way that I can never put words to. So AI would not have allowed that experience to happen if I had AI guiding my life in a very structured way. So there is a pivot point. We have to make a decision, I think, as individuals and as humanity as a whole around where we want it to go. And again, it gets back to the workplace. It's the same thing. How much control do we want AI to have over the workplace, over the ways in which we work, over the ways in which we engage with our customers? Yes, it's going to deliver a one potentiality and perhaps a solid one, but what other potentialities are we denying the business, our customers, and our people?
Great way to finish, Tim. Thank you so much. As always, mate, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I've always looked forward to our discussions, whether it's the pod or anywhere else. So thank you so much for your generosity. And yeah, just a reality check for me. You are in Greece. You are the other side of the world. Yeah. We still make this happen. So you're a great role model. Like you said, the best way to live your life and try to maybe influence others or give them a view of what the path forward is to be a great role model. I think you're definitely that. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be here.
Bye for now. You've been listening to The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
This podcast is produced by Callow, where art and science come together to turn interactions into experiences.
If you're interested in how Callow can help you, head to our website at callowconsulting.com.au.
The Calling was produced with strategy and production support from Wavelength Creative.
So you don't miss an episode of The Calling, don't forget to subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And please leave a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Ho. And we'll catch you next time on The Calling.